Well, here's the world's wisdom on the subject of adversity.
See, I have set before you today life and prosperity, death and adversity.
Adversity is sometimes hard, but for one man who can stand prosperity, there are 100 that will stand adversity.
Adversity draws us together and produces beauty and harmony in life's relationships, just as the cold of winter produces ice flowers on the window panes, which vanish with the warmth.
Adversity can strengthen us if it does not go on too long.
Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head.
Brought to you by the Book of Deuteronomy, Carlyle, Kierkegaard, Mason Cooley, Shakespeare, and Mark Twain, who wrote,
"By trying, we can easily learn to endure adversity. Another man's, I mean." And we should note that, no, in fact, the toad, ugly and venomous, does not wear a precious jewel in his head. But maybe the world does live by poetic license.
Two more stories.
Well, I had been dating my sweetie for about 6 months, and I had fallen in love with him. But he hadn't really fallen in love with me yet, although I know he liked me a lot, and we always had a good time when we were together. I didn't really say, "I'm madly in love with you" or anything, but I was just very enthusiastic when he was around. And he told me that he sensed that I was wanting more, and he wasn't ready for that because he just got out of this 10-year marriage. And so I kind of backed way off after that. It was very hard for me. We were reenacting the Eleusinian Mysteries. My sweetie was Hades, the Lord of the Underworld was his role, and I was Babo, goddess of mirth. And we were doing this ritual, and it lasted like all day and all night. It was too much. It was crazy. And we were at this retreat center, and I had to retreat from the ritual. I had to take a break, so I walked off. Things were kind of tense. And so I just took off. I had a cigarette in one hand and a little glass of wine in the other. And I was walking up this wooden walkway in the dark. And I passed this spot a bunch of times thinking, this is really unsafe. But then in that moment, I was so flustered that I didn't really think about what I was doing. And I tripped on the first step and I came down on the ground. The wine glass shattered and my cigarette broke in half, and then I let out a mighty curse. And I, you know, I had got skin off my hands, you know, and so I just got myself together and headed off for my retreat within a retreat. And after about a half an hour, I started feeling kind of funny. And then I was in terrible pain all night long. Apparently, the ritual was still going on, and it was the next afternoon, and finally, people were coming out of their ritual personas, and I was finally able to actually have a conversation with my guy. Well, when I told him that I had passed out cold on the bathroom floor at 8 in the morning, he said, "Well, I'm taking you to the hospital immediately." Oh, I ruptured my spleen. My mind was focused on my extremities, and I didn't realize that I'd fractured ribs and ruptured my spleen. I was bleeding internally, and that's what was causing the pain, why I couldn't lie flat. And so when I came out of the emergency room and I saw him, I said to him, "I'm going to cry now." And so I cried in his arms for the first time, and it was really wonderful for both of us. Because he'd been wondering why I was this strange type of woman that never cried. And while I was in the hospital, my sweet friend put out all these emails to all of our friends in the communities that we're part of, you know, asking for prayers and people to light candles, and also asking them to donate money because I needed help to survive while I was recovering from this injury. But he also, in these emails, really said that me having this injury really showed him how much he wanted me to be around. And so he wrote these really sweet things to all of our friends, and one of my friends made a copy of it and brought it to me in the hospital. And that was really pretty great. And he came almost every day. He would stay with me for an hour or more. He gave me sponge baths. It was so sweet. I'm usually the kind that likes to take care of myself, and I kind of enjoy it. But it was really nice to surrender to that experience of being cared for and loved in that very physical way. Yeah. I was very lucky because, you know, at first I thought I was going to have this operation, have my spleen removed. But the doctor that I got in the hospital said that they're taking a more conservative approach to these kind of injuries. So I got to keep my spleen and got to keep the love of my life. You know, I never thought I could find someone in my life who would be the perfect complement to myself, being such a strange and interesting person that I am. I'm going to be 42 in September, so I'm 41 now. And, well, you know, life really does get better and better the older you get. I know young people are afraid of growing old. I was afraid, but it's great. It's so much better than when I was young. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. Everything was confusing and overwhelming. And, well, things are still kind of like that, but I'm used to it now, so I can make the most of it. And I just really feel better in so many ways. And, you know, now that I found the love of my life, well, it's great.
Well, we'd come back from 4 days in south part of the state, and it'd been a lot of rain. And we have a redwood deck, and it got really slippery in that time. When the algae covered redwood, it's like turkey snot, you know. You can't imagine anything slipperier. And, of course, I wasn't clued in, and I was in a hurry, and I spun around and went out and hit a patch, flew through the air, landed on my right hip, and broke the femoral neck, and broke it good. Had to have a partial hip replacement that afternoon. It was not a good experience. It was compounded by the fact, not just the trauma of the fall, but I was toward the end of a six-month interferon treatment for hepatitis C, and I had my red cell count was really low at that point, so I was quite weak, and then the surgery on top of that left me in I felt like tissue paper. I could barely move. I couldn't believe how weak I was, and you know, being able to hike and be in the outdoors is really important to me. As a child, you know, I loved nature. It was my salvation. And to this day, nature and making love are my idea of the best way to approach the divine. It hit me really hard. Well, you know, when I was young, you know, bad things happened, and I was flirting with death in my early 20s. When I was in graduate school, it was 1964, spring, and I did IV drugs for about 3 months. That's when I got the hepatitis C. But, it, you know, 39 years later, you know, it catches up with you. Well, it'll kill you in the end. It's a slow liver disease, and it... for the longest time, it usually doesn't do much, but for me, it left me really tired and kind of negative, you know, like everything was too much. Everything was too much. And actually, the interferon treatment wasn't that bad. 2 months were kind of rough, and then I started feeling great. I was optimistic, and I felt like I had a second life, and everything was looking wonderful, and then wham, down I go, fell into grace. And it was like the fall really knocked the last of the puer, to use a Jungian term, you know, the naive boy out of me. You know, like
I thought I was going to fix my marriage. I was going to do a lot of things. I had a spring of hedonism planned, and instead it's a spring of exercises and ligament stretching and introspection. And I was lying in the hospital bed the day after the operation, and I realized that, you know, my life was irrevocably changed and that I wasn't sure how much of my mobility I would get back. So I'm lying there and I'm crying for myself. I'm feeling not so much sorry for myself as great compassion for myself that I'd had this happen out of nowhere. And then the compassion, I kind of surrendered to the compassion. Well, I have never before this moment surrendered in my life, and I'm 63. Well, I did. It was just all too much. And I surrendered, and I fell into this very compassionate space. And it was kind of a Buddhist thing where it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it took in the whole world at some point, where I was thinking of all the kids who pick up cluster bomblets and they step on landmines and all the ethnic cleansing and the horrors that our people visit on each other. And here I am with, you know, a titanium implant and getting really top-of-the-line medical care and all the morphine one could want, and, you know, so the pain is managed, yet it's a pretty horrible experience. And yet I found myself, I fell into a state of grace. It felt like I was opened to the divine within, without. I can't really, it's something you can't explain in words, but it was a powerful experience. And then later on in reflecting, you know, how Native Americans used ordeal as a way to approach spirit, however they called it. Starvation, sun dances, maybe you had the good fortune to be skinned alive by the other tribe and show your merit. But I thought to myself, this is so North American, you know, it's like the old ones took me in, whopped me upside the head, or actually upside the butt, and said, you will now do it. And I did. And reflecting, you know, this is like 3 months afterward, and having come through that ordeal, I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't give up what I got from it. And even though I'm still hobbling around, and, you know, I'm going to have a year of at least of stretching and, you know, strengthening and all that, I wouldn't give it up. And since the accident, I've really learned how to receive. I've always been a giver. And giving is safe because, you know, you don't owe anybody anything. But allowing myself to receive, and I've really come to appreciate it and allow my friends to let me receive, give them the gift of giving to me. And the other thing is it really put me in my body in such a way that I always thought of myself as a physical person, but this is a whole new level. I mean, I have to do it. Every day, twice a day is good. Just do whatever yoga I can do, whatever stretches I can do, whatever exercises I can do, and keep trying to expand the possibilities. But I'm so oriented toward my body now, in a good way, that I think it's a gift. It's a real gift, and it's overdue. I wouldn't take it back. I wouldn't take it back.
In Sonoma County, California, we were talking with friends. The voices you heard were Jim Thaman, Anadea Judith, Jim Drever, John DeMars, Conley Shell, Nemea Arbavite, and Richard Ely.
And send us your stories. Visit our website, www.hitching.org. Read stories from listeners and enter our new monthly story contest. You can also listen to our past shows and the CD anthologies of the Hitchhiker's Audio Library. They are great as gifts to your friends or yourself. You can sample them all there, ranging from ancient myth to present-day politics to very moving life stories. www.hitching.org.
And our show next month. Well, next month, the theme is...
The theme. Well, sometimes we get really tired of shows with themes. We all like to have an organizing principle, but most of us don't really get up in the morning and think, you know, my theme for today is adversity, or, well, today I think I'll meet people with funny stories about their plants. So, you know, once in a while, we just like to bring you people we encountered, stuff that's happened, great stories that just came up. So that's next month. The theme, human beings. That should cover it.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye. And we'd like to invite you to become contributing members of the Hitchhikers Guild.
The Hitchhikers Guild, I need to say, our stations do funding to stay on the air, but they don't pay us for shows like this. Our money comes from a National Endowment for the Arts grant, which we have to match any way we can scrounge it, mainly from listeners like you. A Hitchhikers Guild membership will not bring you a coffee mug or a t-shirt. CDs, yes. In fact, you can subscribe to receive a CD of every show for the year. Many ways to help us keep the show alive. www.hitching.org. Or just let us hear from you. How do you like the show? We really want to know.
And finally, we've just received an award. Thanks to the National Federation of Community Broadcasters who have bestowed upon us their Silver Reel Award for Radio Drama for our play Outside the Dying. And special thanks to a Philadelphia friend, Julie Connerin, who gave us the story it was based on.
If you'd like to hear it, you can. It's on the website. Go to Archives and look down the list for Outside the Dying. So this is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, offering one last thought about the joys of being alive. And, well, after all, it's springtime, and there have been lots of newspaper features about kids with painted eggs. And there is something really eggy and wonderful about springtime. Here is a story from our friend Conley.
I acquired a couple of hens from a friend last year, and so I've been enjoying learning about chickens, and there's just nothing like a really fresh egg. You think your eggs are fresh in the grocery store, and wait till it's been laid only a few hours before and it's still a little warm in your hand. You know, a really fresh egg holds up when you want to beat up a little air into it and make something else from it, whether it's mayonnaise or a cake. That fresh egg just works so much better for things than the one that's been sitting in the store refrigerator for 6 months.